and introduce Epic, and everybody else introduce themselves as well.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Perry Perrault. I'm the CEO and founder of Epic Music LA. Epic Music LA started about 4 or so years ago. Actually, it started as a different company and kind of morphed into Epic Music LA about 3 years ago. And ever since then, we've been here in LA and really growing and making a lot of great connections. We're a smaller boutique company, so we're really focused on providing that service-oriented customer service to clients and composers. We've just really started to create a niche probably over the last 2 years, specifically in sports, and that's mainly because of Jerry Davis, who joined our team a couple years ago. Like I said, a smaller kind of boutique company, but we're very highly curated library that we focus on really high quality music. And in fact, our Generating Spark was from very well-known composers within the industry, people that worked with Madonna, Mariah Carey, or Christina Aguilera, those kind of artists. We really try to focus in on being a unique, agile company that really tries to meet the demands of our clients quickly. And we really started to take off recently with a lot of new opportunities and connections, and one of those being our participation with Sync Summit. And so we're really, really excited to be a part of the New York Sync Summit that's coming up in, I think, about 2 weeks now.
Yep. And Perry, thank you for that. But basically, to put it in a nutshell, what you guys do is you work with some real top producers and composers and musicians to produce music for clients that are across visual media. But it seems to me, and I think this is where Jerry can come in and give some clarity, that more and more of what you guys have been doing has been oriented towards sports, which is sort of a really interesting and unique direction.
That's correct. Yeah, we started out kind of in a general space in the music industry and really started to streamline towards sports. And so over the last 2.5 years, we've really started to carve out an expertise and specialty in that. And I can turn it over to Jerry Davis, who's our Chief Strategy Officer, to talk a little bit more about that.
Yes, thank you, Perry. Mark, it's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to organize this podcast. And yes, allow me to elaborate. And I'd like to elaborate by beginning with one really important word, and that's authenticity. The one key thing that pointed us in the sports direction was authenticity. We all know that the landscape of the music industry has evolved over the last several years. And one of the things that I noticed was how authentic library music had become. And it was becoming even more, the demand was becoming even greater for authenticity, which essentially led us to say, well, look, we have a profound background in sports music. It's highly lucrative. The uses are astronomical. And it's just one of those niche areas that kind of flies under the radar, but it's so important and it's so powerful. I was I'm the former director of music at Fox Sports. I was there for 16 years. And on an average year, we would probably be looking at about 1.6 million pieces of music used throughout all sporting events and programming. And so that's what led us to really put an emphasis on sports, because we knew that it's a lucrative part of the industry and that authenticity was going to be the game changer for us.
I think that it's a really interesting and good point that, first of all, you know, there's we've talked about this before, that people spend a lot of time talking about music and film, music and TV, music and games, and music and advertising, and those are all really important things. But then you think about sports in general and music and how the two of them come together in terms of composition for networks, in terms of live events, in terms of the brands that work around sports and sponsor sports. There's an enormous amount of usage, an enormous amount of money that goes into this when you look at it. And it's really interesting, like you said, it's kind of under the radar, right?
Yeah. Yes,
yeah.
It's like anything, though. This is something that is applicable to all areas, even outside of music. I mean, excuse me, outside of sports. But nobody notices it until there's a mistake. Janet Jackson, right? But yeah. Other than that, people don't notice it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, but still, like, the massive amount of music that goes through it, it's such a big part of what we talk about when we talk about, you know, music supervision, composition, and usage and creation of music for visual media. So that's, you know, I'm pretty excited to talk to you guys about this. So I guess, you know, where I'd like to start off, now that we've had a little bit of an introduction, is how did this evolve in the company where you guys just, you know, sort of said over the last couple of years, you know what, there's an opportunity here that we need to take advantage of. Here's how we're going to go about it. Give us a little insight.
Yeah, so I can talk a little bit about this. This is Perry. So when we first started out, like I said, we really got a really unique generating spark with just high-level composers. We had a handful, and we all came together and started Epic Music LA.
Right.
Just along with that, we had just amazing success in that space. And then through different connections, the main spark with the sports and kind of veering off in that path really did come from Jerry Davis. We
right.
had some connections in the sports world, but when we engaged with Jerry, first of all, it was a great synergistic relationship, and things
right.
just kind of connected, and he came on board Epic Music LA, and from there, just with our resources and his resources and expertise and insight into that space, it really was a pretty spectacular thing, and it was a spark, and from there, things just started falling in places, and over the last 2 years, it's really started to blow up into something very unique. And we've cultivated an expertise in the sports and music space that few other people have.
Right.
So I guess to boil it all that down is the sports piece was really moved forward by Jerry Davis.
Right. And Jerry, tell us a little bit about how you've seen the opportunities evolve for sports and music, and how that evolution has made it a sector that's really worth spending time on and spending effort on.
Well, my gosh, I've seen quite a few changes, evolutionarily speaking, over the years. I was just making a point, this is a minor point, but I was making a point to someone the other day in talking about sports and music that when I first began at Fox Sports in 1997, I pitched a piece of music to a producer that had a vocal on it, and the vocal was a female vocalist.
Right.
And I didn't quite get reprimanded, but I was told, what are you doing? This is sports. Why would you give me a piece of music with a female vocal on it? We don't do female vocals in sports. And I was completely taken back by that. But since I was brand new, I didn't make it an issue. I didn't say anything. I just accepted
right.
it for what it was. But some 20 years later, you hear female vocalists all over the place in sports.
All the time,
that's
yeah.
That's just an example of some of the evolutionary changes. Another evolutionary change is, for whatever reason, and I can get into it at a later date, perhaps even at the panel on June 12th at Webster Hall at the Think Summit, but for whatever reason, the urban music community was slow to jump on the sports music thing. And I have my theories, but I now see producers who have skin in the game with urban music. They have more of a presence, and they're more right. involved in sports music, particularly from a library standpoint.
Right.
And then the other evolutionary thing that I've noticed was the strategic partnerships with advertisers and with other network products, just palling up and doing things together and making it more of a sensational or bigger event.
Right.
When it came to the music.
So just as a, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, no, no. I was just going to say, those are just off the top of my head.
Okay. Just as a follow-up, have you seen more original music, original produced music that's scored and produced specifically for projects being used than there was in the past? Or is it sort of the same as it might have been 10 or 20 years ago?
Well, again, I'm not really championing the urban music banner, but
right.
I would say that it's pretty much the same with the exception of urban music, and here's why.
Right. Okay.
Urban music is a rapidly evolving art form. It changes very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, historically, when you make the decision to do a collection of urban music, by the time it's produced and mastered and, you know, polished and distributed and then disseminated to the end users, you know, if you're not really quick, that sound has already evolved and it's become dated.
Yep.
So what I'm noticing is that specifically in when people are looking for urban music, the end users are more prepared to spend a little bit of money on urban music to capture the current sound, because everybody wants to use what's on top 40 radio. And right now, top 40 radio is dominated by urban pop crossover sound.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. That it sort of evolves with the taste of the marketplace. And you know, have you seen another question is, have you seen more integration between artists and sports, or has it remained sort of stable?
I definitely have seen more artists and sport. What's the word I'm looking for?
Like tie-ins? Yeah.
Yeah, tie-ins and collaborations. Because I've been saying this for 20 years. Athletes love to be around musicians, and musicians love to be around athletes.
But yep.
What has also happened was what I mentioned earlier, is that between Napster and the consolidation of the major labels and just this new record industry, this new school thing, people are starting to pull from different areas in which they historically have not pulled from, in order to get exposure for a project. And a lot of artists understand that. And a lot of artists are much more receptive to
right.
engaging the athlete or the sports entity in order to promote, market, or gain exposure for their product. So I definitely see more and more of a collaboration there.
Cool. Now, when you're looking at sports, like I'm asking what might seem really basic questions to you guys, but I think a lot of people have these questions in their head. When you're looking at sports, is there one sport or another sport where there's much more sort of like a music-centric focus?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, here's what's interesting. And you can pay attention to this when you're watching, if you're a sports fan and you're watching a lot of games. This is a generalization. I do not like generalizations. I teach my children that generalizations are not good. But sometimes right. they just work when nothing else will work. So generally speaking, each sport has its own sound.
Right.
If you hear aggressive hard rock, heavy metal music, it's probably going to be hockey. If you
right.
hear more urban music in terms of quantity, it's probably going to be the NBA. If you're hearing more Americana, more pop, more middle of the road sort of stuff, probably the NFL.
Right.
And baseball used to be like that, but what happened in baseball was that baseball is becoming more global, and now you have to have music specific to other cultures.
Right.
It's no longer good enough to just have Latino music. You have to have Venezuelan music. You have to have Cuban music. You have to have Puerto Rican music. You have to have Dominican music. You have to have Mexican music. And similarly with the Asian athlete. We are now seeing more and more athletes coming from Korea and Japan and China and Taiwan. So baseball sound is more middle of the road, pop, crossover, just like the NFL, with the exception of international music.
Right. That's really quite interesting. But the internationalization of baseball makes it so that, you know, if you have, you're going to use Japanese music with a Japanese hitter, you know, you're going to use Korean with a Korean pitcher, et cetera, et cetera. Because, like, I see that it goes back to what you were talking about, authenticity. You know, it's really like you can't pull the wool over the eyes of a fan. You know, they don't want to have music that's from, you know, Tennessee playing for a Japanese guy or, you know, vice versa. You know, it has to be authentic to the person. And it's really interesting, like, you know, you think about this, like how you go about sourcing that sort of stuff and how you find the people to produce that. Because I assume that a lot of the people that you work with, in terms of producers, writers, artists, are from different genres. So they're not just, you know, it's not just somebody who does pop music, hip-hop music, or whatever. You call in a lot of people, I would assume, depending on the job that's at hand, right?
Yes. And for me as a music person, it's really rewarding because I've always liked various genres of music.
Yeah.
And because sports is a microcosm of society, it allows me to, you know, pursue the best hard rock, the best EDM, the best country music, the best urban music. And it's just pleasing to my ear to be able to do all of the above and not be limited to one genre or one category. And so it's a labor of love, and I cannot stress that deeply enough when I say so.
That's fantastic. So, you know, what are some of the things, what are some of the trends that you see now that are happening in the marketplace?
Well, are you speaking specifically within sport or in general?
I'm saying in sport. Yeah, let's just focus on music and sport. Like, what are the trends that you're seeing now? Like, is there more integration? Is there more usage? Is there more usage of original music, etc.? Just your observations.
I'd say there's more original music in promos. We've already touched upon urban music, but I'm also seeing more and more requests and demand for EDM.
That
has been a recent thing. So I guess the producers are getting younger now.
Right.
And this is what they like, and this is what they're using. I can remember there was a period in time where orchestral hip-hop was very, very big, and I think it still exists. But that was not as in demand today as EDM is.
Yeah, it's super interesting. Like, you think about it, then again, it goes back to what people listen to and what they like. And, you know, when you're thinking about sports, you're thinking, like, in my mind, I think, okay, you're going to need stuff that sounds really upbeat, super anthemic, and gets people excited, gets them worked up, gets them in the mood to experience something. And, you know, when you think about that, you think, okay, hard rock, hip hop, depending on what, you know, what markets you're talking about. EDM is interesting because, you know, I guess you could, you know, we could talk about what genre EDM, whatever, but it's really a reflection, like you said, of the producers. The producers are younger, but also the audience's taste of change too.
Oh yeah. It really has. I think, and I wish I could say this with certainty, so please do your own homework. But I believe that I saw a statistic or a fact that said that the average viewer of Major League Baseball is between the ages of 40 and 65.
That makes sense to me. Yeah. And if you talk...
Go ahead.
Oh, no, finish your thought. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no. All I was going to just say was you have to take that in consideration when you're pitching music or when you're placing music. And it's as simple as that.
And you know, if you take a look at football, you're going to have a younger average age, right?
Yes. Yeah. And the youngest is easily the NBA. The NBA is, it's my kid. It's my 20-year-old son. It's my 25-year-old son.
Right.
That's the NBA, and you have to account for that.
Yeah, and you have to program the right music for it. So, so let's see. So if somebody wanted to work with you guys, how would they go about doing it? I'm talking more, okay, on the sports side, and, we can talk about that too, like how would they work with you. But really, if somebody's a musician or a producer, do you guys just have your own stable of people that you work with day to day? Do you find new people to work with? How does that work?
Yeah, we actually do both. We have people that we work with are usual clients, but then, part of what Epic wants to do is really focus on, we have another piece that really focuses on education and really trying to take the time to help composers understand the sports space. And so, we've spent many hours working with new composers that come in, and Jerry and I and other people on the Epic team will work with them and actually help hone their sound so that they can understand what sports music is and how it needs to be produced. So we really take time to do that piece, but then on the flip side, just like you said, we have our usual composers that are, very well experienced in that space, and we pull off their expertise to provide, top quality music to our clients.
That's actually really interesting, because I think that's something we haven't touched on that much. Composing for sports would be, in my mind, sort of if you put composing for television and you make it even more time sensitive and more frequent, that's where sports is. Because I would imagine, it's almost like one step below like producing for live, because you have to constantly have.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is live, okay? So, if you think of it, and you need to be able to have compositions or music that's sort of like the top-level music for the big trailers, and that's one level. Then you've got another level of it where you're going to be, looking at interstitials and promotions that are, within an event. And there's, sort of, flourishes or things that are put in, during the broadcast. So there's a lot of different levels of music, and you really have to, if you're composing for it, you're going to really have to be somebody who can work under some pretty tight deadlines and conditions, right?
Yes. You're 100%. And I'll say something else. And a lot of people will probably take exception to this, but this is one thing that I'm adamant about. And I was in a scenario with a composer, a dear friend of mine. He was doing some music for us. And this was a lesson. This was a lesson that I learned. And I ended up having to pull him off of the project. And I realized it was because he was not a sports fan. And he couldn't capture the passion and the drama necessary to complete the piece of music that I needed.
Oh, that is such a good point. Wow.
And I began to realize that although you may not necessarily have to be a cop to do music for a cop show, or you don't have to be a reporter to do music for a news broadcast, but in sports, it matters. It really matters. And I know there's differences between instrumentals and lyrics and things like that. I'm just making this up on the fly. But if I'm looking for a piece of music for game one of the NBA Finals, my composer needs to know that this is the trilogy of Cleveland and Golden State 3 years in a row. And so there's going to be greater drama, greater tension. There may be a lyric out there that just works better than any other lyric. And it just matters in what we do that the composer is a sports fan.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It goes back again to authenticity. If you're not into football, you're not going to make it something that's going to be exciting or relevant musically. Because really, you know, what we're talking about here, and I think this goes across any genre, is that you're talking about an enhancement of the visual, an enhancement of an experience, or maybe you look at it this way, it's a completion of an experience, right? That's what the music ultimately should do, is to take something that's happening on screen and really emphasize the parts that give it emotion. And, you mm-hmm. know, if you don't have the emotion for it, it's going to be hard for you to create mm-hmm. something that is going to emote, I guess. You know, but I mean, it's true.
Right.
Here's another example, Mark. What if you're given the assignment to do some music for a bowl game, the Rose Bowl, Orange Bowl, BCS Championship, but you're not a college football fan? Are you really going to understand the pageantry of college football? Are you really going to understand the snares and the horns? Well, it matters in this genre and what we do. It matters.
It does. Yeah, it matters a lot. Now, I wanted to just briefly go to something that we haven't spoken about, because I think it's interesting, is that there's sort of an intersection that is an intersection that's a lot of money and promotional opportunity for artists and the people that work with them. And that's the intersection of sports, brands, and music. You know, the truth of the matter is that big consumer brands, whether it's, you know, Coca-Cola, whether it's Anheuser-Busch, one of their brands, one of Coca-Cola's brands, whatever it is, they look at sports as one of the primary ways that they can promote to specific markets and integrate themselves into a lifestyle and into something that's exciting for people. And music is a big part of making that happen. Now, from your point of view, you know, how important is this, like, sort of mix between music, sports, and brands? And, you know, have you seen this over time become a bigger thing than, say, it was? And if so, how?
Yeah. Yes, I can tell you how. I have seen it become a bigger thing. And the area in which it has had the most impact, I would say, is the actual licensing of music from the label and the publisher, securing the master and the CD. There is more of a willingness to be collaborative,
right,
and not be dictatorial and demanding from the publisher and the label side, because they're beginning to see the bigger picture.
Right.
And so they're more willing to work with the brand and the network to promote and give their artists exposure, because they understand that they're going to be there's going to be many, many, many eyeballs on their product or their artist that normally wouldn't be on their artist or product. I think
right.
that's probably the biggest, the most notable.
Yeah, and that's the thing, really, what it comes down to is that, you know, if you're a manager or a label and you have an act mm-hmm. that is lucky enough to win the, really, to win the lottery. I mean, that's the way I look at this. They're lucky enough to win the lottery and get their song into a Super Bowl commercial. That makes them,
mm-hmm.
period. It just makes them. I mean, it's the end of the story. It makes them. All of a sudden, they're an act, you know. Mm-hmm. And from the perspective of a brand, the sports and music, both of them in their own way, help to create more engagement and more loyalty from the demos that they're targeting. And if you look at sports events, okay, brands obviously bring money, so there's not a lot of explanation there. They bring money, and you know, hopefully they're aligned with the lifestyle or the messaging. And they usually are. I mean, I think people do a pretty good job matching things up in sports and brands. So they're usually pretty well aligned. And then the sport and the brand, if they can come together with specific artists that they're working with or that can speak